Steel Bin. Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We have a wonderful program. We're going to get into it in just a moment. I would like to begin by asking you, our listeners, to consider doing a favor for me, and that's, well, get in contact with us. We try to reach out to you with programs. We hope that the topics are of interest and they're important topics like today, but we'd love to hear your suggestions. Maybe you have a possible guest we could reach out to. Perhaps you have a topic we could try to address. If you'd like to do so, please either mail us or email us. First, let's take a look at the mail. If you feel much more comfortable just writing a letter and putting a stamp on that letter, send it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. 06836. If you want to email us, please do so at clemons10@aol.com. That's CLEMONS, the number 10, at AOL.com. While you're on the computer, please go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. You can find that at this address, spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. You'll find some features and articles and also Thoughts for the Week, our radio program. And if your computer has the speakers, you could listen to not only the program we're doing today, but also an archive programs of various topics. We hope you can do that. And you can do it at your leisure rather than getting up at a particular time on Sunday. What we'd like to do now is to get into today's fascinating program. I begin by welcoming, and delighted to do so, welcoming my co-host, Dorothy Riera. Dorothy.
Thank you, Father. A pleasure to be here and very excited with our special guest today.
And our special guest today is the founder of an organization known as Al's Angels. And we're going to find out what that organization does, and you're going to be delighted just to know that there's a group like this out there. But Mr. Al DeGuido is the founder. Al, welcome to Thoughts for the Week.
Thank you very much, Father. Great to be here.
And we are, as I mentioned, absolutely delighted that your organization exists and is functioning. We all recognize that angels are messengers from God, messengers that bring some important way in which a person's life could be affected. What you have done is now brought into your own group of angels who are, I think, doing that, just bringing a message of God's love, especially to those who are most vulnerable, those who I think need to feel that they're surrounded by love. And these are our children who are suffering. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I'd like you to just speak to us a little bit about maybe what brought you to the founding of Al's Angels and exactly what Al's Angels is out to accomplish.
Sure. You know, if you spoke to my mom, and I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, was one of seven kids. If you spoke to my mom, she would probably think that say to you, I was no angel when I was growing up. I was quite the opposite. I was a little bit of a troublemaker. But my life changed about 20-plus years ago when I was at an event that I thought was just a place where I would pick up autographs of football players, the New York Giants. And that night, my life changed when a mother walked to the podium of a great event and said that her child, her daughter, was dying of cancer, was a young child, and that she had been wiped out financially. And she was followed by 3 to 4 other women who had similar stories. And I was just blown away by the fact that in the United States of America, this richest country in the world, that mothers who had children that were dying of cancer had to stand in front of strangers and beg for money, for food, and for clothing for their dying children. That was something that I couldn't get out of my head. And on the way home that night in the pouring rain, the Holy Spirit spoke to me, and he haunted me, basically, with these words, "What if it were you? What if it were your child?" And at the time, my children were very young. I have three children. And and I pulled to the side of the road, and I couldn't get that thought out of my head. What if it were you? What if it were my kids? What if it were people that I knew? How would I go about living my life knowing that there was nothing that I could do and that I had to beg people because I had been wiped out financially? So that night, Al's Angels was born when I woke up my wife and said to her, we got to start to do something. This is crazy that we're sitting on the sidelines here. Let's figure out if we can do something. And Al's Angels was formed that night. We didn't call it Al's Angels at the time, but we said, listen, we're going to start small. We have this garage in Westport. We're going to pick 40 families. And we're going to find them through hospitals. And we're going to go to them and say, listen, give us the people who are the most desperate, that need the most help. And we got a couple of my friends and said, okay, we're going to go to BJ's Wholesale Club, and we're going to pick up the food. We're going to put it in these plastic bins, and we're going to go deliver this food. And I can tell you that experience that year, 20-plus years ago, was an unbelievable experience, because giving someone a gesture of love and the reception that we got from those people was as if we gave them $1 million. That someone thought enough about them and their situation that total strangers would come into their life and give them food was something that kind of blew their mind, and it blew our mind. So I remember the first year coming back to that garage and said, listen, every year we're going to do one more family or 10 more families. And with the help of God and so many great volunteers, this past year, we helped over 3,200 families have their Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah meals. And when I talk about their meals, each meal is $100 worth of groceries so they can have a representative meal. And we helped over 12,000 children in the tri-state area have a Christmas or a Hanukkah where we provided them nice toys, not little trinkets, but really nice toys for the holidays, where most of these families would have had nothing without the work that we have done.
When you think of it, the families that are there, you know, when they're in the hospital, they're there for 4, 6, 8 weeks
exactly.
consecutive. So the hospital doesn't provides for the children, but the parents are there. I know it from experience because people from all over bring food to my children, to my son and daughter-in-law who are at the hospital.
Yeah, a number of the places, like we're up at Yale New Haven, we provide them toys and food. We provide St. Vincent's and Bridgeport Hospital and a number, you know, over 12 to 15 hospitals in the tri-state area. You're right. I mean, there are no budgets inside of these hospitals to provide this level of care and support. So that's where we kind of step in.
You know, you mentioned the hospitals, that they were then the conduit to reaching the children. I think of the HIPAA laws. How does that happen? And I'm also thinking of maybe people throughout this country or on the internet globally who want to do something like you're doing. How do you go about it?
Yeah, I mean, we met with early on. We met with social workers and administrators there, and to say that initially, that the reception was warm and embracing is to understate it. There's a suspicion that they have, right? Why is it that you want to do this? And what, you know, what's, I remember the four hospitals that we do out in Long Island, every one of the meetings that we had, they said, so what do you want? I said, no, we don't want anything. All we want to know is the fact that, you know, what we provide in terms of aid and support is something that your client, your patient portfolio needs. Those people need. They said, you don't want anything else, right? So we don't want anything. We don't want accolades. We don't want anything. So, you know, there's all kinds of regulations now when we enter a hospital that we can't take photos, that we can't really have names, that we can't, you know, there's a lot of things that we can't do. So you have to kind of work around all of that. Because I'm not a good guy with bureaucracy. I'm not, you know, people know that about me. You know, if you're a bureaucrat and you're trying to get in the way of us providing love and care to someone, you know, selfless love to someone, then I'm going to kind of figure out a way around you. So, because I don't want to see, you know, we had a hospital that once came back to us and said, well, we have no place to store these food bins. And as a result of that, we don't want them. And I said, well, wait a second. You've got 75 families here who need food for the holidays. And you're telling me because you don't have a space to store these bins that these families are going to go without food? I can't accept that. We're going to figure something else out. So, you know, it's not an easy thing to do all the time. But whether you're working through an oncology facility or a clinic or a hospital, there's rules and regulation. We're respectful of that. But we're committed to get done what we need to get done. And if you have that kind of passion and commitment to get things done, you can get it done.
I presume once you've established a relationship with a given institution, that things kind of flow pretty well after
Yeah,
that.
We've been doing this for close to 20 years. So, once you have relationships, they kind of look forward to it, right? They say, okay, we've got patients that are asking us, are we going to do this again this year? It's always when we kind of, and the credibility of the organization has helped us gain acceptance in new places. So with the help of God, every year we try to raise more money. And as a result of that, you know, every year we start this time of year, you know, we have very little in the bank because we do all of our fundraising and then all of our efforts happen in the second half of the year. Mm. So, but the credibility of what we've been able to do has other hospitals making contact with us now and saying, is there something you can do for us? The saddest days of the year for me, the saddest days, are usually after we have done everything that we have done, mm-hmm. and we have nothing left, mm-hmm. literally, and then we get calls. We get calls from people. Can you help me here? Can you help me there? And it's like, we don't. So,
have you created a foundation, Al?
The Al's Angels? Yeah, we're a 501c3. Okay. We're a 501c3 tax-exempt organization.
How can people get in touch with or learn about Al's Angels?
So there's a number of different ways. If you go up on the website, alsangels.org, there's a lot of information up there. You can go to Facebook and look up Al's Angels in Connecticut, and there's a lot of information there. If you'd like to reach out and volunteer or help us, you can send me an email at adiguido. It's adiguido@yahoo.com, and we'll put you on our email list. We use email extensively to communicate all the work that we're doing, all the volunteer efforts that we have. So if you're on that list, you're getting kind of a pipeline of information from us.
What kind of staff or how many volunteers? What's happening?
Yeah, people say, well, how big is your staff?
Do they meet in your home? Or?
it's working. I have a home office that it's all done. We call this one of the greatest virtual organizations that was ever created. And I've built, by the way, with my career on the private sector, I've built very large organizations with very big infrastructures. This, the beauty of Al's Angels is there's no paid staff. There's no paid anybody. It's an entirely volunteer organization that comes together to get something done and then disbands. So, what's great is after you've done it for the number of years that we've done it, people understand what their responsibilities are. There is no staff. There basically is, we're going to do an event. We're going to put together a committee of people. We're not going to have a lot of big committee meetings. We know what we need to get done. We're right now in the planning stages of a couple of events. One event that we're going to do in Fairfield where we're going to bring a synthetic ice rink to Fairfield Center, and we're going to, as a fundraiser for Al's Angels, we're doing a big event on May 20th that is our Angel Aid, the third year we've done it, which is lemonade stands. We do 75 to 100 lemonade stands, raise $100,000 all throughout Fairfield County. All of that is being done through a band of volunteers, hundreds of volunteers that come together and we coordinate and we get things done. We're not into a hierarchy and we're not into what traditionally a way businesses have run.
Yeah. Now, you've been at it for 20 years.
Yep.
So I'm in that. The question may not really apply because it depends so much on the individual and small donations.
Yep.
But I'm just wondering what the feeling of philanthropy over the past 20 years, and it's something that's growing.
And I get called to consult and help other organizations that are trying to raise money all the time. They want to know how the heck is this possible that you're doing what you're doing. The beauty of Al's Angels and what works for Al's Angels from a fundraising standpoint is everybody can write a check, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody can write a check. You write it for. There's a lot of great organizations out there. People write checks for, but the check goes in and you never understand what happened to the money. With Al's Angels, the ability to make a donation and then be active in the actual tactical work using that money. So it's like you can be there from the moment you give us your check. We don't ask people to make a donation to be involved, but if you're involved and you're supporting us, you can be there when we receive all the food, the tractor trailer worth of food. You can be the one who receive it. You and your family can be an active members of putting that all together into bins. You can ride on the trucks that go out and deliver all of this stuff. You can wrap the gifts. You can help us deliver the gifts. So the fact that we connect the dots for someone who's making a donation is huge, because people, there's never a question of, well, where's all that money going, and why are people, where are you spending all that money, which you can have with other organizations. And, you see it happen in the press these days in some of these very, very large organizations where there's all sorts of questions about where the money is going. Mm-hmm. And, how much is going to administration and how much is going to this.
And the rest,
So to me, the fact that a family who supports Al's Angels or an individual who supports Al's Angels can be an active participant in the actual outreach, can truly be an angel beyond just the donation, is really kind of the secret to it. And whenever I give any counsel to anybody else, I say, whatever organization, you need to give your donors the ability to be intimately involved in the whatever aid that you provide. The closer you can do to that, the more that the donor will feel a kinship to your message and to your efforts.
And what a learning experience for the youth of today if they could get involved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because, we need to teach these children that there are other people out there suffering and in dire need.
I'm most inspired by young people. I mean, it's just incredible. Kids under the age of 10. The number of kids who will come in into our stores or will send a note to us saying, hey, listen, I had a stand out in front of my house, or I have my piggy bank, and here's $75, or in the case around the holidays of, kids that have made ornaments raising, $750. Kids, it's an incredible blessing, but kids get it. Young children get it. I don't know, I can't speak about, older teens and, the tweens and all this other stuff, but I can tell you that legion, you want to have hope and inspiration, that legion of kids under the age of 10, they get it. They understand somewhere in their upbringing, in the messaging that they've received along the way, they understand how important it is to help children that are like them and do it in a very tangible way. I mean, I can sit here for the next hour giving you chapter and verse of children who have done that type of work, not being pushed or prodded. They, on their own initiative, have decided. We have a kid, Samantha Hensky, who is down on the beach in Jersey Shore selling, sand sculptures, and comes back with, $250. She's on the beach in the summer doing this stuff, and nobody knows. And she just walks in, here's a check for $250. No one told her to do that. So it's if you're looking for hope in the world in terms of the message getting through, it is in that younger generation. They're incredible.
As you're speaking, and it's a topic that comes up from time to time, but I think about, in the news often talks about events that cause collateral damage. This has to have collateral blessings when you think about the technology of this age, where kids relate to the machine, and now you give them an opportunity to really have person-to-person love and contact. Just that is great.
Right. What's interesting is when we have our big events where we do our meal assembly events or our wrapping events, there are kids that will come with their phones, right? Their cell phone. Everybody, they're attached to their cell phones. And what we will say to them is, listen, put that all away. Put it all away. We need you, when you're wrapping a gift or when you're putting an item into a bin for a meal, what we want you to be focused on is the love that you are extending from you to that individual by performing this action. We didn't invite your Facebook friends or your Twitter followers to this event. You showed up. So if you focus on wrapping that gift nicely, putting everything neatly into a meal bin, and the items are just a tactical representation of the love that we want you to extend into the work that you're doing, that gets it done. Now, when they leave those events, you will see Facebook and Pinterest and all these other places, just Snapchat, they just light up, because these kids want to tell other kids that they had a phenomenal time and that this was a really meaningful thing. So that's why I say, the groundswell of support that we're getting from this digital generation is incredible. But the first the first experience they had was one of heart and of love,
mm-hmm.
and then they extended out to their you know their digital devices.
That's great. Yeah, they didn't expect the device to provide the stimulus and inspiration. It was the love that came first, and
right.
then use it.
Right, exactly.
Spread the word. What about the frustrations? What do you think is a great frustration in life?
My frustrations are, and I'm constantly tormented by this because I see a tremendous amount of people who spend money like, you know, I mean, all we have to do is look at our, you know, our election season and the billions of dollars that are being mm-hmm. basically thrown away mm-hmm. and the amount of waste that is rampant in our country these days. The frustration is what are the right words? What is the right pictures? What are the right messages that I can use and others that are part of Al's Angels can use to accurately depict the plight of those who are suffering? If you're not suffering and it doesn't impact you, I have to bring you through word pictures. I have to bring you into a place that is a very uncomfortable place for you to be. When you're there, your heart opens up. Right. So for me, the frustration is finding, you know, knocking. I want everyone to support Al's Angels. So knocking down the walls and coming up with the messaging that says, what is it like for you to be a 7-year-old kid inside of a hospital by yourself being poked and prodded during the holiday season? What does that feel like? I want you to go, you as a donor, potentially a volunteer, I want you to go to that place and feel that emotion. Because if you can feel that emotion, then it will open up a heart in your heart your need to do something. Because you don't want to do that. You want to kind of, like the people like I said, I will invite people to come to the hospital. No, I don't want to go there. Why? I would feel awkward. Yeah, I know, but I want you to live in that awkwardness. Because that's the life that these children and their families are dealing with. And the more that you can understand that, the more I feel as if you will be supportive. So that's the frustration always. I can't videotape what it's like.
Mm.
I can't do interviews of kids sitting in beds.
Mm.
So I have to work on word pictures and on telling the story in a way that conveys a place to someone who's not cold-hearted, but just who I know could do more.
Is it different for children that suffer from domestic violence?
No, it's whether you're, you know, we deal with people who've got AIDS and who've got, you know, domestic violence. You know, our catchphrase at Al's Angels is "Be not afraid" to the person that we're dealing with, because these kids, they're going through conditions and situations where they didn't do anything to deserve the diseases and the conditions that they've got. They were born into this situation by some randomness. They are dealing with this, so we want them to know that they're not alone. That there are people out there who care about them, who want to do good things for them, who want to comfort them. So, yeah, I mean, I think that regardless of the condition, the role of Al's Angels is to provide that level of comfort. And before, Father, you were saying about, you know, this is a vulnerable class of human beings. I call the disease and these conditions despicable. The fact that these diseases prey on people who are the most vulnerable mm-hmm. makes the disease and the condition even more despicable in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So to... that it should stimulate in all of us the angelic side of us, that we need to rise up and defeat the foe, right? I mean, if you saw a child being abused, if you saw your own child being abused, you wouldn't stand on the sidelines and say, well, what can I do? You would jump in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where the anger and the passion has to come from, that this is a despicable foe that preys on the most vulnerable in our society, and there's nobody else coming to help. So, you know, get off your butt and let's get going here. So it's that type of thing. Whatever it is, whether it's domestic violence or AIDS or cancer or any of these diseases that these children have gotten, no, they didn't do anything wrong.
Now, I've asked about the frustration. It'd only be fair now for me to ask about your greatest joy in what you've done.
The greatest joy is watching children who smile. I mean, mm-hmm. they smile. It's an amazing thing to see. When you walk into a hospital or an oncology facility and you see children who are crying or who are suffering, and where in that brief moment you get them to forget their pain and you get them to laugh. I mean, it sounds like something very simple. We take it for granted, laughter mm-hmm. or joking mm-hmm. around. But to know that that you, because of what you have done, have brought some element of joy into their life in that brief moment, to me is my greatest joy. And the frustration, before you were talking about the frustration, is this underclass, this vulnerable class of children, who is to be their voice, right? Who is to be their, who's to aid, who's to speak for them, right? While they're undergoing all this pain and suffering. I mean, who speaks for the poor, right? So we, as angels, the greatest joy I have was when people allow us opportunities like this one, right? To get out there and talk about the message. But when people give us an opportunity to get in front of others and we can convince more people to step up and be angels, right? And like I said, it's not only just the monetary side of this. It's, can you spread the word to someone else? Can you come and volunteer? Can you be part of what we are about? That's a great joy.
You know, you said, I know our audience has been just delighted that you're doing what you're doing. And you put the emphasis on there's no staff, there's no salaries given out to people. But what happens after Al? What happens after you? Is there some strategy?
Yeah, really. I've been asked that question a lot lately. I don't know what it is. I think that I've had my children and my family involved, which has been great. So my kids have all been intimately involved in the organization. You know, is there life after Al? Yeah. I mean, I say this all the time, that I hope that in my lifetime that we get to a point where we can knock down all of these oncology facilities and replace them with playgrounds. I really do. I think that it is within the stretch of imagination and prayer that we can actually get to that point. But yeah, I mean, there's a legacy plan for, you know, the day that I'm no longer around to continue this work. But I sincerely hope and pray each day that that there is a day where we don't have to do this anymore, because I don't want to be doing this anymore. I really don't want to be doing this anymore. I don't want any child to suffer in the way these children have suffered. I don't want anyone to go without food or clothing or gifts or joy in their lives. I just don't want that to happen. So there's a plan for that.
And I know, obviously, with all these young kids you have, you're spreading the seed of what might mature into something where these kids
take on the effort themselves. Yeah, the amount of initiative that's coming from that younger generation, there's no doubt they will be here to carry it on.
Very good. I noticed you talked a lot about toys and a lot about kind of like the speciae of what you're doing. What about financial help? I think you do provide some financial help.
Yeah, we have in certain situations, just recently we've helped to purchase for two young boys who were not supposed to be alive, who have spinal muscular atrophy, where we were able to raise a significant amount of money, in the most recent case, $83,000 in 15 days, amongst 400 donors, so that we could buy a van, a wheelchair-accessible van for a child that basically needs that to live. Previously, also, another $60,000 we raised to buy another van for another child. Both of them had spinal muscular atrophy, which the van is the difference between them sitting in a room staring at the ceiling and being able to be active members of the community. So we, from time to time, we will do those types of things, or we will reach into, when there are natural disasters where children and families are impacted, we'll jump in there and provide financial support as well. It's all reliant on our ability to raise a lot of money. And we spend, people say, well, you play golf or anything. I say, no. What I do most of the year is figure out new and innovative ways to raise money.
Well, we're in the last few seconds of this program. I just wanted to have our listeners know we've been talking to Al DiGuido of Al's Angels. Get on the computer. Learn about them, please. Google them, alsangels.org. If you could help, that's a great thing. Thank you so much, Al, for being with us.
Thank you, Father Ray. I really appreciate it.
Dorothy, God bless
you.
All of you. And all the listeners, thank you. Join us again.